From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we take a look at the battle with the coronavirus through the eyes of China's media. We begin with this report from the U.S. with Nathan King for China's global television network, CGTN.
U.S. President Donald Trump has largely delegated talking about the coronavirus crisis to others, but not Tuesday. In a 90-minute briefing, the president switched between somber and optimistic tones, asking the American people to sacrifice, but he hopes not for long.
We're asking everyone to work at home if possible, postpone unnecessary travel, and limit social gatherings to no more than 10 people. By making shared sacrifices and temporary changes, we can protect the health of our people and we can protect our economy. So it's 15 days from yesterday. We'll see what happens after that. If we do this right, our country and the world, frankly, but our country can be rolling again pretty quickly, pretty quickly.
His advisors don't expect this to be over quickly, and the size of a new economic stimulus package being rushed together is bigger than the one passed during the financial crisis, up to $1 trillion divided between businesses that need support and sending checks to the vast majority of Americans. The U.S. Treasury Secretary says he wants this passed right away. He also said the U.S. financial markets will stay open.
We're looking at sending checks to Americans immediately. And what we've heard from hardworking Americans, many companies have now shut down, whether it's bars or restaurants. Americans need cash now, and the president wants to get cash now. And I mean now, in the next 2 weeks. We absolutely believe in keeping the markets open, okay? Americans need to know they have access to their money. After September 11th, the only reason why the markets were closed was because the technology was disrupted. I've been on the phone with the major banks, with the New York Stock Exchange. Everybody wants to keep it open.
There are still big questions about whether the U.S. healthcare system can cope with the coming crisis. Shortages of tests, ventilators, even ICU beds. But it is clear that the White House and the federal government are starting to think big, big, just as this new wave of coronavirus cases hits the United States. Nathan King, CGTN, at the White House.
Next, Wang Guan, hosting CGTN's program The Point, discusses China's relations with the U.S. during the crisis, as well as the impacts that the spread of the virus is having in Africa. This is Wang Guan, host of CGTN's program The Point.
The Chinese virus, that is how the President of the United States characterized the coronavirus in his latest tweet. In that tweet, he also said he will support U.S. industries affected by the outbreak. Trump's tweet comes after the Wall Street suffered the worst percentage drop since the 1987 stock market crash. Is the U.S. president resorting to xenophobia and nationalism to divert attention from his failure to control the outbreak? Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is James Early, CEO of Stansberry China, and from Beijing via Skype is Professor Liu Baocheng from University of International Business and Economics. We'll discuss all those issues and more. I want to begin with you, Mr. Early. Let's first of all take a look at Trump's tweet, whereby he said the United States will be powerfully supporting those industries like airlines and others that are particularly affected by the Chinese virus. We will be stronger than ever before. So, Mr. Curley, what's your reaction when you first read those, the tweet?
Well, I think those words were a mistake, and I think they come across as pretty insensitive from Trump. I certainly would not have advised that if I were his PR advisor, not that he would listen to a PR advisor in the first place. In limited defense of Trump, I would say I think what he's doing is not so much randomly lashing out at China as a nation in that tweet. It's more a reaction to this Chinese foreign ministry conspiracy theory stuff that we're seeing now, insinuating or saying that the U.S. Army may have started this virus, which I think is, at least in the Western world, is pretty unanimously seen as ridiculous. So, and frankly, I think that's a PR mistake the Chinese propaganda unit is making. But in terms of Trump's response, it would be much better for him to call it out directly and say what he means rather than try to take a little jab at it with this Chinese virus stuff, because that gets confused, that gets misinterpreted by people, and it certainly causes a little bit of an uproar like we're seeing now.
Well, Professor Liu, you just heard from Mr. Early, whereby he said this is basically a counter-reaction from Trump to China's, attack on the U.S. Do you agree?
Well, I wish it was really an ignorant mistake because he didn't have the time or energy to learn new vocabulary. So either it is really coronavirus or it's COVID-19. But the fact that he responded with such a word, that is really painting pain on China, So this is a very strong mistake. And hopefully there is no really vicious attention out of it. But actually before, even Pompeo, as a top diplomat, also made such sort of remark as to refer as Wuhan. So if it is really an ignorant mistake, like referring MERS as, Middle East respiratory, the problem. So that is really not acceptable, but we do not read vicious attention. But if it is really politically trying to shrug off his own responsibility or inadequacy in providing the right type of governance and service to the American people, that is totally unacceptable. And also during such a tension over the whole world are really facing panic, and they try to identify where is the source, who are there to be responsible by having, the rhetoric as Chinese virus, and that is there to invoke, the continued discrimination against the Asian community, and particularly naming the Chinese community, and this is politically a vicious result, at least.
Well, Mr. Early, do you think this is an effort, by that I mean Trump's tweet calling this the Chinese virus, do you think this is an effort by the President of the United States to divert attention from many of his own failures, arguably, regarding prevention and control? And let's not forget, this comes right after one of the worst stock market crashes in the history of the United States.
I mean, diverting is a standard political trick, and we can't rule that out here, though. I would say a very strategic calculation on Trump's part, maybe giving him a bit much credit in this case. I think he's just barely getting his own hands around this virus, and he did clearly underestimate it in the beginning. I think that's pretty clear, and he's got an election coming up to worry about. So, it wouldn't hurt to distract from some of that, but, I think on both sides, on the U.S. side and on the Chinese side, there's really little to be gained, ironically, from blaming the exact point of the virus. I mean, obviously, it took root in China. That happened. That's done. Hopefully, we can all move on as a species and as a humanity from that. But yeah, I think this move was a miscalculation.
Both sides should move on. I would agree with that. But the Chinese Foreign Ministry just responded to Trump's tweet. Let's take a listen.
The World Health Organization and the international community are clearly opposed to linking the virus to specific countries and regions and against stigma. We urge the U.S. to immediately correct its mistakes and immediately stop unjustified accusations against China.
So, Mr. Liu, we've seen an escalation, at least in the rhetoric, between China and the United States. Do you think this trend will continue, and do you think this will really jeopardize efforts for both sides to contain this epidemic, or pandemic rather?
It is already hurting the sentiment on both sides, and also that has also elevated to the diplomatic relations, because both of those diplomats are really pointing fingers, and right now this is really irrational, because there is no verified evidence whether it is really originated in China or originated in the United States or everywhere. And when the conspiracy theory is really flying over the world, it is particularly crucial for politicians and for diplomats to remain very calm and respect science and respect facts. So fiction can really travel very fast, and rumor can really hurt people. So as responsible leaders, it is not acceptable to take it as out of convenience or out of vicious intention. And so I hope that there can be a certain clarification, if not apology, from the U.S. side. And there also has been overreaction from China. So I think they will restore to ration and respect signs and then come down so that they will not really escalate to certain heightened tension.
Well, definitely. Trump's tweet and the rhetorics from both sides have generated quite some discussions on social media. Let's look at some of them. Social media user HoHoF said, viruses could start anywhere. The Spanish flu and the H1N1 started in the US. China has done everything it could to stop the virus, the coronavirus, from spreading, but people are moving around the world, and if the virus is spread in the US, the US government is held accountable, not China. But some other folks do not agree. For example, this user of social media, the Bradford File, said, thank you to President Trump. Thank you for calling the virus what it is, a Chinese virus. China is responsible for all of this chaos, carnage, and costs. They must be held accountable. Mr. Early, how do you look at these polarizing remarks?
Well, of course, they're ugly. You know, these kind of comments come out when doors are opened with words like Trump used. I will say, in the interest of being balanced, the same thing happens in China, and I've seen it. There's a very active little red guard, and it definitely comes out, and it's definitely fomented by many in the Chinese media as well. So that's why I agree with the idea of toning this down on both sides, because it's not pretty. Both the U.S. and China sort of know that each one is the center of the world. That's how they were raised. That's how they were educated. And there are definitely zealots, they're going to look for something to grab onto on both sides. Again, I think it's a PR mistake for China to be pushing the conspiracy theory, quite frankly. They should be riding high on successfully controlling the virus. That is fantastic. That is a PR win. That is something that basically no other country has been able to do, and they did it very well. I think they should be coasting on that and not pushing more. I think both sides should kind of quell this down rather than let it get out of hand.
Well, on controlling the virus, there are some discussions in the social media as well. For example, the Marco Solo to happen, by the name of Marco Solo to happen. He or she said, they also set a great example. China set a great example on how to stop and manage the outbreak. The U.S. has done little to prevent the spread of the virus and continue to blame a recovering China. Whereas another user, by the name of Brooker, said, do you know how many people there are in China? 1.4 billion people, five times yours in the United States. I think the Chinese government has done a good job with so many people. The virus has basically been eliminated. I would like to ask if the United States can do the same. Professor Liu, is it fair to say that China has been largely able to eliminate the virus, and now many of the U.S. arguments and attacks are not legitimate?
Well, actually, different countries have very different situation, different culture, and the level of compliance from their people is also vastly different. So actually, I'm not really particularly in favor of China inviting appraises or high commands. It's really up to the world to exercise their own perception over China. There can be certain criticism from their own standpoint of view, but the fact that China has really taken very harsh measures, paying very tough economic prices to contain this virus is really a fact that is really worth the pride of all Chinese people. And this model may not be applicable to the United States, to England, or to Italy, but there has to be certain respect and sympathy over the efforts made and over the difficulties each country have encountered. And actually, even more on top of that, countries, particularly, China can really share the experience, share some of the clinical data, and the world can really work together so that, you know, we are able to move faster on the discovery of, of new vaccines, or, you know, even, you know, to work together on academic research so that the world can really get better sooner.
Well, talking about economic impact, Mr. Early, I'm looking at the major indexes on the U.S. stock market right now. There has been little movement as of now regarding the major indexes after the historic crash yesterday. The President of the United States came out and said on Tuesday that the U.S. economy may be sliding into recession. Is he trying to manage people's expectations, or is he been more truthful this time around, Mr. Early?
Well, if Trump is saying we may be sliding into recession, I think that's truthful, and I think that's honesty that should be welcomed. There's no denying, you know, a virus like this is going to take a major effect on any country's economy. Goldman Sachs was estimating that for the last quarter, China's GDP may have gone negative 9% growth. That's huge. That's huge. And the U.S. will certainly have some type of similar fate, at least directionally, as will Europe, as will Korea, as will basically any place affected by the virus. So I think it's normal. I think it's natural. I think it's nothing to be ashamed of. Now is the time to be taking care of health first and taking care of our economies as second priority.
Well, Professor Liu, you said that basically China's model cannot be indiscriminately copied around the world. China, of course, set a good precedent whereby countries are like, look, if China can contain this virus, maybe we can as well. But as you rightly mentioned, there are huge economic consequences. What do you think the rest of the world should pay attention to when they're trying to quarantine people, trying to test people, and trying to practice social distancing with the economic consequences in mind?
Well, I think now, you know, every major political leader will have to come through an ethical test. And whether they are paying attention to the stock market, which is, you know, right, but in the meantime, they cannot really forfeit the even a single life. So they cannot really make an economic trade-off between life and the economy. So therefore, I do, you know, actually personally at least support the Chinese government view, you know, even if we are paying huge prices economically, we with life, we have time to make it up. And now I think the different type of interest groups are pulling the string behind many political leaders to shift their attention to what they really would like desire to. But that's why political leaders will have to remain rational and responsible and make the right type of calculation so that they support people's life in the first priority.
Let's hope there will be right calculations. I want to thank both of you gentlemen. From Washington, D.C., James Early, CEO of Stansberry China, and from Beijing, Professor Liu Baocheng from University of International Business and Economics. Thank you. You may not hear this from global media headlines all the time, but Africa is also being hit hard by the coronavirus. Over half of Africa's countries have reported over 400 positive cases as of March the 17th, and seven people have died. International flights have been canceled, schools closed, and travel from coronavirus-hit regions restricted. South Africa declared a national state of disaster on Sunday, with the number of cases brought by overseas travelers increasing. Is an outbreak imminent, and how real is that danger? I'm now joined via Skype by Wang Wenwen, reporter from Global Times, who covered Africa extensively as a reporter, and from Nairobi by Douglas Ockwatch, senior editor from CGTN Africa. Douglas, I want to begin with you. You know, when some people talk about Africa, it's as if it is a monolithic whole, as if Senegal is the same as Ethiopia or Egypt, the same as DR Congo. But we know this is a big continent. It's a complex continent. 400 positive cases so far. That doesn't sound like a big number. Are some regions worse hit than the others?
Yeah,
what's the situation on the ground?
Yeah, what we have been seeing in Africa is that there is an escalation, or we are seeing the beginning of an escalation. Initially, countries would report one or two cases, and then it would appear to stagnate. But now we are seeing those countries that were reporting one or two cases are now beginning to report more and more cases. So there seems to be a proliferation of cases. And like you say, out of Africa's 54 countries, almost 30 countries have now reported cases of the COVID-19 or coronavirus. So what we are seeing is a situation where I think the window of opportunity for Africa is closing very rapidly. Africa did have the opportunity to clamp down on the virus, to prevent the virus from entering its borders, but that window seems to be closing. So we might be bracing for probably, this could probably be the lull before a big storm. And what we are witnessing is that African leaders, African governments, are beginning to really be proactive, to put their foot down and do something. For example, in more recent days, we've seen South Africa's president, Cyril Ramaphosa, roll out a raft of measures. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has also very recently rolled out a raft of measures to slow down the virus. So some of the things that African countries are doing are, for example, limiting or banning gatherings. Some countries have closed institutions of learning. Mm-hmm. But that isn't really enough. So each country, each government is in its very own unique situation, like you pointed out in mm-hmm. that opener. And one of the panelists mentioned something very interesting about culture and the whole idea of social distance. So while that might be very easy to enforce in other cultures, in other countries, in other setups, that might be a challenge in Africa, because even the very nature of the African economy is an economy where a majority wake up in the morning to go to work, to look for money, to buy food. So the whole idea of keeping people at home might be very difficult to enforce in Africa. However, we
but according to WHO and major epidemiologists and experts on the ground, social distancing is a proven method to contain and control this epidemic. So should there be more cases, imported cases from overseas, what must be done by the authorities to make sure that people are quarantined, are isolated soon enough?
Social distancing is a good thing. Of course, it's been effective. It, as you've pointed out, in some other countries, it has worked quite well. And I think what African leaders and African governments are trying to do is to request people who suspect they may have contracted the virus, or who think they were in contact with people who had the virus, to self-quarantine. I think that is working very well in some situations. But we are not too sure how well that can work to keep the virus at bay. So that is just but one of the methods that governments are trying to use to limit the number of people that are in interaction with others, and therefore enabling the virus to spread very quickly. Like I just mentioned, the step about closing institutions of learning, but also the problem of sanitation in Africa. You know, a majority of Africans still are very rural based. And even in urban centers and cities, many of them live in informal settlements. And we have sanitation situations there, lack of running water. So Africa may need help. The weak link in this fight in Africa might actually be the health system, which is very weak. So the help, the support Africa needs probably would be health experts to come and join hands with other African experts. Africa will mm-hmm. need sanitizers.
Right, right.
Africa will need a lot of help from the other end. And also training of frontline staff to boost the fight against the coronavirus.
Douglas, of course, there are many challenges over there. I want to bring in our colleague Wang Wenwen from Global Times. She was a reporter in Africa who covered the continent extensively. So Wenwen, what are your biggest concerns right now regarding the situation in Africa?
Yes. Right now, I'm a little worried about the capability of African governments handling the infected cases. Although Africa has got enough time to prepare for any worst-case scenario, right now they have already got temperature checks at airports and have quarantine regulations for visitor arrivals. But there are still problems, like whether the coronavirus will turn out to be a seasonal disease. It is a very open question now. And I'm also worried about the anti-China sentiment in the continent. And I saw from news reports that in Kenya, people have already felt anti-China sentiment, and some of them are quite vocal about Chinese presence there. So if the situation runs out of control, people's attitudes toward China will be a big problem.
Sure, I saw some of those reports and videos on social media as well. When talking about infectious diseases, Africa is no stranger to those. Ebola outbreak a couple of years ago killed hundreds of thousands. Many countries in Africa still have the medical facilities and expertise in place, when they fought the Ebola outbreak. How do you think those experiences can enlighten the current authorities, people on the ground, when it comes to fighting coronavirus?
I think they have already got the experience of fighting Ebola, so they know how the deadly the virus can be. So people may be self-conscious and self-disciplined when the government sets restrictions on them and tell them to do some social distancing and those kind of things. And also the facilities set up during the Ebola outbreak will definitely help African governments to deal with the current crisis now. And the problem is that I think African people need to see the difference between those two kinds of outbreaks and be alert about the situation elsewhere so they can be better prepared for the situation on their soil.
Well, very quickly, Wen, what is China doing to help Africa right now?
China has sent China's disease control centers has sent medical workers to Africa, and also we know that some private enterprises are sending medical material and resources to aid the continent. And also we have a lot of people-to-people exchanges about how to aid African people at the public level. And also at the government level, China is working closely with the countries in Africa and to show them China's experience, such as city lockdown and temperature checks and those kind of things.
Well, Douglas, we have about 40 seconds left. Your message to those who blame, those in Africa who blame China for this ongoing coronavirus outbreak?
I think this is as a result of misinformation. And one of the things the government is trying to fight is this scourge of disinformation, which plants into people's minds the wrong perception about other people. As has already been observed by other panelists, this virus is a global problem. So what we need now is not to stand apart, but to stand together and fight it together. We see it as a common enemy. Instead of splintering people in terms of race, in terms of place of origin, that wouldn't be very helpful. So that would be my message to those who are spreading this misinformation.
All right. Douglas Sockwatch, senior editor from CGTN Africa, and Wang Wenwen, reporter from Global Times, who covered Africa extensively. Thank you so much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.